Mr. Palmer, Reel 9. Now, take up the story of your duties with 16th Battalion in the intelligence section at headquarters. The time you're roughly in the Djebel Aboud mines area.
Yes.
Now, could you tell me what's the next thing you remember? It's quite a complicated period, this, isn't it?
It's quite complicated, and in fact, I've only got a few sort of memories. I was just speaking from here to there, you never got a chance really to take anything in great depth, but nevertheless, there were quite interesting things connected with it. Personal, some of them. After what we mentioned here, and I can't tell you exactly why, I think we will move back to the mine, but the rifle company, one rifle company, stayed under the command of one or two rifle companies, what was left anyway after the Battle of Sedgemoor, the first battle, and the rest were moved back because for some time now, Major Vizard, whether he was Major Vizard then or not, I'm not quite sure, but he gathered a good many of the remnants from the battalions together there to be held in reserve, and in fact at the beginning, if necessary, to act as a deterrent to the Germans, because there was, upon an area of the mine, there was a little small attack which took place, which the people there, including, I think it was some of the Lincolns as well, there was, but never mind, that doesn't matter. And therefore, that became the mine. The mine was a kind of base, and the forward positions obviously were forward of there. And then, after reinforcements had come in, and things became re-established once more, still under the command of the 1st Parachute Battalion, we were moved forward to Nefsa Station, which was in the area of Sedgemoor and a little bit beyond. And while we were up there, one night we had the ghouls on the side of us, and from a point of view of gathering intelligence, one of our section was moved along to the ghouls' camp, where, by the way, they were highly entertained by the officers who were there. And what struck us was the ghouls lit fires on the slopes, and these flames were visible for miles around. And this must have put some amount of terror into the heart of the sagging area, because this was at night, and the attack was put in at night, and the Bersaglieri regiment was routed. But of course, you always get a group of stragglers and the rest of it who come in, and seeing them out in the front, one of our officers took a small section to investigate what it was all about. And what we saw, I was on an observation post at the time, I knew that this, of course, was likely to happen, and here were these people coming in. In fact, I believe that I saw them before a patrol was sent out. This group was coming, not that I necessarily was responsible for noticing first of all, but still they became visible about half a mile or so away. And there was one sergeant in the front and an officer behind, and there were, I believe it was staged there, about 100 men that were brought in.
That would be under Lieutenant Pritchard.
That would be under Lieutenant Pritchard, yes. Who was the, I've just forgotten what his position was. He wasn't in command of one of the rifle companies, but the he probably was a member of the rifle company, of a rifle company anyway. And from that particular point, we started moving around all over the place. We were taken out of the command, away from the 1st Battalion of the Parachute Regiment, and we were moved down to a place, the name just...
I think you went once back to the mines at Jabal Abayad again.
We went back to the mine, yes, and from there...
To Oued Zarga.
Yes, and from the mine, that's right, I had a raging toothache one day, and I was taken down by ambulance down to one of the bases, and they took out, no question of filling anything, they pulled out two teeth, and of course, never really had. I think I just, in all my life, I'd only had one tooth out before that. And the ambulance came and took me back after some hours. It would be about 3 in the afternoon when we went back. And of course, he was shelled on the way back to the mines. So everybody, I say everybody, there weren't more than about half a dozen of us, and slid out and got down the roadside until it had stopped. Now, I don't know with this sort of Desert Fleet shelling, I don't for 1 minute think that the Germans would do it deliberately, because it tended to stop once they realised it was an ambulance. But of course, if you hear sound of traffic, anything like that, and you get the whereabouts of the sound, you're liable to bring fire down upon it. Particularly as you know it's not going to be one of your own. Things get a bit complicated, of course, in battle. And you mentioned to me the other day when it was a bit... Something about it was a bit of a shambles, but often battles can turn a little bit that way, and it's the one that gets out of the shambles first.
So, at the 7th of April, you were in the Oued Zarga area. Anything about that that you remember?
The Oued Zarga area, very vaguely, we were moved up there, I think I'm right in saying this, because a group... after all, we weren't very strong, we still weren't made up very considerably, but we were moved all over the place. And we moved up to this area because we would be useful in this particular situation, that one of the regiments had to take over from another one. And obviously when this happens, when you've got one regiment taking over from another, it's always very helpful if you've got a holding group, which are holding the line just at that point, because the Germans or anybody else would be very quick on doing anything if they felt there was any kind of weakness anywhere. And I remember that we were up there during the day, and it doesn't mention it in there, but I'm pretty sure this was where they started to make roads through up the hillside, and of course they came up with their tractors and the rest of it to make the road out, because they were bringing troops up, and that was the best way to give them some kind of guidance up the mountain. They were perfectly safe, you see, doing that, and the actual machines were behind the lines. And while we were there, this was during the following morning, before, while the battle was on, there was a German twin-engine plane came over, just very, very low, and I think possibly it had been hit by something. And it didn't offer anything to us, but I noticed that one or two people were firing machine guns at it, and of course that's always a point where you want to hold your head down. And after that particular incident, we moved out again. And as I say, this was all a bit bewildering. We went to certain places. I believe that, I'm not sure, but I think it was after this, we were moved out for the rest. And it didn't transpire. This was happening all the way through with me out all the way to have a rest. And then you're wanted urgently in another part of the line. So you find that, as a group, this is what we were doing all the time, filling gaps.
You were passing from one brigade to another.
From one brigade to another, yes, and one division to another. It mentions there something about the 4th Division, for instance, was the next one we went to. And that one before, I think I'm right in saying we were part of 78th Division.
So the Jebel Maladi, I think, was with the 78th Division, and then on to...
Maladi, this was where I mentioned about the Messerschmitt, the 110th Division.
And then you went to the Sidi Nasir Valley, I think, El Arousa.
I don't recall anything about that at all. I don't know where it was. I've got no memories of it whatsoever. But as it says there, from the Sidi Nasir Valley, we were moved to another division. Was it the 4th?
I think you went back to 46th. I think you were
the 46th.
To your own division.
The division regrouped and got some of its strays back.
Because then there was a big attack on Sidi Barker.
There was a big attack on Sidi Barker.
On the 22nd of April.
Yes.
What do you recall of that? How would the intelligence section be involved in preparing for a big attack?
An attack like that, well, in a way... Not at all, because you had to adapt. If you were called up to do any work at all, well, you would have to adapt to it, whatever the situation was. And quite obviously, if, for instance, the battalion is going into the attack, any intelligence work, in a sense, cannot be carried out, because all the intelligence is going to be done by the forward group, because they're going to report on the any kind of hold up that they have with the enemy, and then when they've got into some kind of position where they can deploy, we'll say, observation posts, as they will do rapidly, then if it's thought vital, then they will bring the intelligence section forward. So the intelligence section, in other words, followed behind, not at night, not when the night attack went in, but when they were already on the slopes there, but as it points out, they met a false crest. And this very, very often happened, because they were not able to move forward, and I think that, well, I remember this, because we had come forward then, and they were shelling and mortaring like mad. I mean, this went on, we'd be about a couple of hours there before finally we were moved back, because there was no question of having any observation post there whatsoever. The only observation could be done by the company itself. And as it says there, that the officer... The captain, who was new to us, who come for reinforcement, Martin, he was killed in action, so it passed to his second in command, who was
Reynolds.
Ah, that's it, Reynolds. Yes, passed on to him, and I think he won the military cross for doing that. But mind you, he had a very good sergeant. Major sergeants with him. They relied enormously upon their NCOs in situations of this kind. And eventually, of course, because of attacks on other parts, from I think the Hampshire regiment is mentioned, once they had successfully cleared the hill, and we held on because the Germans, of course, counterattack. The whole idea of bringing down the mortar fire was to drive us back and then come over the top. So really, that got rid of an awful situation. And I can remember quite distinctly there, and it is an interesting point, I think, that back in the company, not company headquarters, but back where the stretcher bearers were bringing in their wounded. They had quite a few of these occurring. One of them had a mild attack of shell shock. In other words, he was panicked. He'd come down there and we were standing by, and it shouldn't be rigid, because the sergeant there, who was a very fine sergeant of the stretcher bearers, took this fellow and he smacked his face on either side and said, "That's it." And you know that worked. That actually worked. It wasn't, as I say, it was panic as much as anything else. And actually, what we did from that point on, we set off to carry one of the stretchers there, to one of the Red Cross ambulances down in the valley. So that was really, that is my memory anyway of the affair on City Barker, that with you being shelled like this, and it was very, what happened was there were little gullies and rocks, of course, all round. Now, you took what shelter you could, for instance, down there while the shelling was going on, and obviously when they brought the mortars and shells over, very often it wasn't the front line that they were after. It was after getting at the base and in fact causing disorganisation there. So that your idea was to try and break the lines of communication. And splitting or dividing up a unit, and a unit, for instance, which was not in control of the situation there could suffer impossibly. So we took the fellow back, and that was the end of that. And after this, all that I can remember is, I don't know which one came first, whether the victory march at Tunis or not.
Yes, they went to Oued Zarga.
Yes.
And it was 20th of May as the Tunis victory parade.
There was the 20th of May.
Yeah.
And that was,
do you remember that?
Before Gardimeo, because
yes.
It was there. Now it was at Gardimeo that our elder daughter was born at that particular time. So it sticks in my memory because quite obviously my wife was hearing very spasmodically to get any news. You stole whatever spare time you've got to send a letter home, but of course you couldn't write home with any great regularity, particularly under the circumstances that I described. It was very difficult.
Was that preying on your mind, knowing she was pregnant and on her own, or what?
Well, the funny thing is, mentioning about them having the teeth out, in between, in part of the time that I mentioned, you, I went down to the aid post one morning because I was getting toothache and it was round about this particular time. And of course, whether it is a myth that the parents are affected in this way where teeth are concerned or not, I don't know whether it is a myth, but certainly it may just have been repercussions from having the other two teeth out. Toothache is an abominable thing because if you've got toothache, it can be as bad as any pain in the body.
Now, so what do you remember the victory parade at all in Tunis?
Not really, no. We marched, of course, streets and crowds about, but in a way. It wouldn't be the thing that I would particularly enjoy, but I mean, we did it, and we were very proud. There's no doubt about it that there was a good deal of pride in the regiment, and also there was great relief that the battle was over. And as it mentions there, eventually we were moved to Hammam Leaf.
Now, while you were at Gardimeo, you were guarding some prisoners.
We were guarding prisoners, yes.
Did you have anything to do with that, with your, your job?
We had more or less part of the guard duties, watching them. And of course, it was a wide open compound, this was done on, I think it was more or less on a hillside.
Did you interrogate them at all? You know, that
no, no, but whether they were members of the section did or not, I can't remember. I don't think they did. I think by this time it had got down to possibly more to brigade level.
And then the next move, as you mentioned, was to Hammond Leith.
Yes. And that was a nice moment break, because the waters at Hammond Leith were lovely and warm, and you could get in, it didn't really matter whether you could swim, you could be out of your depth, but it was so calm, it didn't really matter. And of course it was terribly hot, and what was the most quirky thing were the flies. They bit like mad. It came out of the sand, and that was more or less it.
Then you moved back to Bleeder, which is
South
of Algiers.
I don't remember an awful lot about that. It's always a little bit boring, you know, when you move back to base and you've got to find entertainment or whatever.
What sort of entertainment would you have in a place like Bleeder?
Nothing, from a point of view. You had to make your own entertainment.
What would you do?
We didn't do anything, but the officers and sergeants, they had things to do. I used to spend my time where I could get out walking around Bleeder and part of the getting to know the landscape a bit. And we did a little bit of hill climbing there. And this is a part I can remember because it was a fairly new experience for me, was going up these hillsides and going up in a truck, and the people who were walking could almost beat us there because the natives used to cut straight across, come up the path through the middle instead of just zigzagging about. And we had one or two schemes on the top. The idea, you see, was we were to prepare for mountains, and therefore it was essential that we did a lot of walking and climbing there in order to get our breath for this kind of thing, including I think one or two nightmare nights. That we see was all, every section in the way took the part that which was very, very relative.
Now, so you're training and resting at Bleeder, and then in August you went up to Bizerta.
Yes.
13th, I think.
To going overseas.
And it says there were a couple of assault landing exercises. Do you remember them? Landing exercises.
No. I don't, actually, at all. I can remember when we got we went into Sicily first, because Sicily then had been taken, and I can remember we did some schemes on Sicily. Does it mention those there? It does, yes. I don't really think we did very much of this there, so we were not there very long. To me, it just seemed like a day or two.
So then you went to Sicily. That's how you remember it.
Yes, we went to Sicily and we did one or two little schemes there before we set out. And of course, when we went out in the assault craft.
Now, you were to land at Salona, I think, on the 9th of September.
Yes, 9th of September.
What was your role during the landing? How was the landing organised as a landing?
The landing was organised with 46th Division being just to the right of Salerno, with the Americans, and I think also on our right were the guards. I couldn't tell you offhand which guards they were. I think it was the Grenadiers, or Scots guards. And the idea was that you made your landing at night. We didn't go in on the first wave. We went in after the first wave had gone in. And we went in during the day, and we were stuck on the beach for a bit because we were waiting more or less for instructions.
Now, let me take you through this bit by bit. So, did you land with the first waves, or would you be held back with it?
We were held back with the second wave.
No, I mean, yourself amongst the battalion. How many ships were the assault landing craft for the battalion on? And do you remember what actually happened when you landed?
Right, the assault landing craft, of course, we had to move very quickly. And once the boat had, well, it was necessary, you waded through. Well, sometimes they could get closer in than some of the others and so on. And once we got ashore...
Were you under fire?
We were under fire from shells.
Not small?
Obviously not in the infantry, no, because... They had, after the first wave, they had been pushed back so that they wouldn't have the same vision as possibly their gunners had. They had commanding slopes and they could see a great deal of it. I'm not saying they could see the whole of the beach, but they knew exactly where the beach was and they let fly. And of course we, therefore, first thing we did was to dig in. And that was more or less what we were told to do, and then...
Was that on the beach itself?
Yeah, that was on the... Yes. So that particular contingent, if they were possibly with officers, they may have moved forward under the direction of officers, but our instruction was to wait until someone came for us.
What was the scene on the beach? I mean, were there a lot of people... busy digging in, or lots of evidence of the fighting?
Not a great many, you know, most of them moved out from there.
Had the casualties been cleared away?
Yes, the casualties were cleared. As I say, it would be some time afterwards that some kind of establishment was made. But the point was that when we were eventually collected from there, we didn't go straight away into the centre of Salerno. We went up one of the hills on the right-hand side. But the orders came through for us to move from there. We were at the rear of one of the rifle companies. We were told to move down there, and we were moved down to the centre of Salerno. And whether it was that first night that we were in, or the second night, we came under intense... fire, not so much with shells and the rest of it, but certainly small arms fire, because it was pretty obvious when we got into Salerno that things were pretty dicey. One of our companies was up at Hospital Hill, which was on the left of us, and of course there were other battalions that were over on this side. And Battalion headquarters was in between the two, and just in front of us, well, it was the road. There was the road going through the main road was there, and then you had got plantations, you've got little groves, fruit trees, all the usual thing, and what we had to do that particular night was simply to stay stuck, and the colonel was there, and Major Johnson, one of the company commanders, was there, and they were talking all the time. The small arms fire was going here, and we were just behind the wall, and they were out in the open and didn't concern them, you know. And then